This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Greg Agigian is talking to us here about the 1973 UFO wave, the possible UFO flap conditions. I lived through that. I remember I was working at a radio station in southeast Pennsylvania near the Mason-Dixon line, and I read a report on the wire services about a flying saucer sighting near Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, like, you know, 10, 15 minute drive from where I was working. And that's where things sort of began. But as you see, it's around the country. And I guess the question that arises from what you told us in the last segment is this a publicity flap where the coverage breeds the interest and the willingness of other people to report something?
Yeah, I mean, I guess by saying that, when we say something like that, I don't think one can say simply that, aha, that explains it. Well, that's all it is. I mean, I know that that will become sort of the argument of a kind of classical debunking position. And it may be, it may have its own validity, but it seems to me that what it really says is really a couple things. First of all, it's kind of a reminder. It's kind of a warning for all of us who want to look into these things that we always have to sort of step carefully, ask ourselves questions about sources of information. That's what you always want to do when you're doing any sort of serious, sober-minded research. So I think that's one of the important sort of takeaways from that. But I think for me, it's less that I'm convinced that people were seeing things, that people were, there were objects or things that were capturing people's attention. But that superimposed on top of that is the conversation, is the discussion. I think in many ways you can't separate them out. You couldn't separate it out at the time if you're alive at that time. I was alive at that time as well. And you can't separate those things out. So when we study these things, I think it's incumbent upon us to actually take all of those seriously and to see them all as intimately bound up in one another. It's messy. It makes getting to the heart of the truth of the matter, if that's what you're interested in, very, very difficult. That, to me, is what human history is. It's messy. And it's one of the things that makes us absolutely marvelous, wonderful, strange creatures.
That brings to mind something. I've compared ufology sometimes to pro wrestling, and that, you know, there are a lot of people that attracted the sensational aspects and the drama. And I just thought of another sports comparison. It's like, okay, so maybe, you know, the actual UFO events, whatever they are, that's like the play on the field in a football game. And then ufology is like the tailgate parties, the fans with the paint and, you know, with horned helmets and painted faces and things, and, you know, but this whole circus is attached, and the barriers between them are pretty thin or sometimes non-existent.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're quite right. And you know, I think there's also the other aspects. So you could also say that ufology and many ufologists also are the equivalent of like sports analysts, right? They go over the games that have been played and sort of dissected, and, you know, they probably have certain home teams they root for, and there's different camps about whether Jimmy Garoppolo is a good quarterback or a lousy quarterback, right, and these kinds of things. And I guess it's something, and I don't know. I mean, if I can shoot a question actually to you, Kurt, because I know you do so much in this area that's absolutely fascinating. I'm an avid fan of the saucers that time forgot and blue blurry lines. But I mean, one of the things I've talked about with journalists who are interested in asking me about ufology and stuff, and I've said, you know, I'm not sure I always understand this, but it seems to me implied in what you were saying was that, you know, historically, so many people have been involved in ufology it will reflect on this very fact. Jim Moseley used to talk about all the time how acrimonious, right? How angry people can get, how upset people can get with one another within the community, but also with outsiders. What do you think is behind that? Because I think it's one of the criticisms that's often lodged at ufology is that it can be sometimes a pretty rough and tumble world. And some people are, and I sometimes ask myself a question, why is it like that?
You know, that's an aspect of the saucer clubs that we kind of missed discussing, is the fact that they were so territorial. And, you know, part of it is some ego. I think another thing was a shortage of material. I know APRO and MUFON in the 70s had these huge feuds basically over cases. And, you know, sometimes like the APRO had the Travis Walton case, and then MUFON kind of said, well, then that's not very good. And then, you know, when the Cash Random case came up, there was sort of a turf battle over that, and APRO kind of said, well, MUFON can have that because we have guys in Houston that are close to it. But in print, they just savaged each other and made accusations that, well, MUFON has government connections, and, you know, and so there was it was really, you know, it was kind of a feud thing. And I think Gene has talked before when he visited Richard Hall at NICAP and was unwelcome there because he didn't like the viewpoint of Saucer News.
Mm.
So, Gene, I know you saw some of this firsthand.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it was very interesting, that visit. This goes back to 1965, and I had been to NICAP headquarters earlier. In 1965, we're talking about me being 20 years old. I'm an old guy. And I went to NICAP headquarters innocently with some friends, a guy from Brooklyn, Marty Salkind, Rick Hilberg, and Alan Greenfield. Okay, the previous day we met Major Kehoe at his home in Luray, Virginia. And he seemed like a pleasant guy and everything. I later learned that he was a very sloppy manager. Richard Hall was basically running NICAP. Next day I go in there to the headquarters, and this is the cultural aspect about NICAP headquarters, okay? It was located on DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. Not the newest office building, but a small suite of offices, workable. If you look at the film The Day the Earth Stood Still, the scene where Klaatu is shot down by the authorities, it was very much in that area.
Ooh.
Now, isn't that culturally strange? Okay, so we go up to the headquarters, knock on the door. Richard Hall looks at me and points his finger, shaking at me. I'm speaking literally. Said, "You're not welcome here." And then this started a whole movement. So I told Jim Moseley about it, but I also called Ray Palmer because I had interviewed him a couple of years earlier, and I asked him what he thought we should do, because he was following the UFO culture in Flying Saucers magazine. I didn't realize naively then what an operator Palmer was, but let's forget about that. He wrote an article in Flying Saucers magazine called "No Investigations Can Actually Proceed," which stands for NICAP, Major Kehoe's organization. Jim Moseley would say to me, "Okay, Hall must fall. Let's start this movement. Hall must fall." By the way, Richard Hall did eventually leave NICAP, not because of anything we did, but a lot of people did clamor for that, saying you should not treat eager teens, young adults, men, you know, young men, you shouldn't treat them in a nasty fashion because one of them works for some guy in New Jersey you don't agree with. Mm. Now, 10 years later, I'm at a UFO convention in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And there's Richard Hall. And we looked at each other. He knew who I was. We shook hands. That was it. The debate was over. We're 10 years older now. And we're cool. We're in the same range. In fact, the sad thing about it, and we'll go into more of this discussion in the next segment, the sad thing about all of it is that we never got a chance to interview Richard Hall on the Paracast because he died a few years after the show debuted, and we couldn't get a hold of him. We tried John Keogh, and that didn't work either, but that's another story. Greg Agigian joining us, professor of history, looking into the world of the paranormal, an emphasis on UFOs with Gene and Kurt. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices start at just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Are you ready to retire? Inflation is picking up, the markets are volatile, and the dream of a comfortable retirement is harder to attain than ever before. The stock market goes up and down is beyond your control. But you're at a point in your life where you can't afford to make big financial mistakes. I'm Al Abaroa, founder of Knight Strategic Wealth. Our investment strategy allows you to go up with the stock market, lock in your gains, and when the stock market goes down, your investment won't lose a dime. This works for your investments, savings at a brokerage firm, or even money at a bank. It's simple, it's safe, and that's why savvy investors work with us. Want to learn more? Text FREE to 833-898-0500, and we'll send our retirement readiness kit directly to your phone right now. If you want to help build a retirement portfolio that will go up with the market and literally never lose money, get our retirement readiness kit today and see how this strategy can help secure your future. Text FREE to 833-898-0500. Text FREE to 833-898-0500.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So, as you were saying, Greg, UFO clubs would fight amongst each other, like even APRO and NICAP. There'd be an argument, how close does Major Kehoe allow a UFO to get? Because they were reluctant to deal with abduction cases, although they eventually cover the one regarding the hills. Go ahead, Greg.
Right, right. What both of you say is, I think, quite interesting, right, is this territoriality here. And you're quite right. You know, the two big guns by the 1960s, at least in the United States, right, are APRO and NICAP. And, of course, they kind of understood themselves, given, you know, what the Lorenzans thought about what they were up to at APRO and what Kehoe had in mind for NICAP. They kind of had different missions, right? I mean, Kehoe understands kind of the one of the key, or if not the primary mission, is what I guess we today would call disclosure, right? And, you know, APRO saw itself as, well, we're doing investigations, and Coral Lorenzen, as you well know, thought, you know, kept telling Kehoe, I don't know why you're interested in what the military coming clean. They don't know anything. They're just a bunch of bumbling idiots. But that to me, to get back to what I had originally been asking about, sort of begs the question. You know, you've got two major organizations. There were plenty of people, right? I don't know if that was the case with Eugene or people you knew, but I know there were people who were members of both organizations and read both news bulletins, you know, religiously at the time. They have two different sets of kind of interests and missions. How is it that you can't just get on with one another and cooperate, right? Why territoriality when, in fact, you know, you've got the pie is big and there's a lot of different ways to go. So that, like I say, I continue to sort of try to still get a better understanding for how it is that this fractiousness that seems to be historically endemic in so many instances, how it is that it's there and why it manifests itself and why it's been so perpetually at times difficult to sort of overcome.
Well, let me just tell you one more thing here, and that is Jim Moseley and Richard Hall kind of hated each other. And Jim was very innocent about it. He'd like to cover both sides, although there were other aspects to his personality that you probably know. So one time Jim calls Richard Hall to maybe just get an update on what NICAP was working on. And Hall blurts out, are you taping this conversation? Now, those of us who knew Jim Moseley then and later on in life know that he was the ultimate Luddite. He ultimately switched from a manual typewriter to an electric typewriter. He never bought a personal computer, didn't have a cell phone, didn't have an answering machine. And we're talking about a guy who lived into the early part of the second decade of the 21st century. Never had those things. So Hall's saying, are you taping this? And Jim says, of course not. I don't even have a tape recorder. And eventually words were exchanged and they hung up on each other. So that was Jim Moseley and Richard Hall. So that was part of, shall we say, the predecessor to my meeting Hall, him knowing that I was doing some work with Jim Moseley and him dismissing me outright because of that. So that was part of it right there. And that was unfortunate. But the other thing about Jim Moseley, and something that he admitted on the Paracast the times he appeared, he and his friend Gray Barker created a fake feud.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they would attack each other in print just to keep the action going. Now, in a sense, Ray Palmer would do things like that in a different way. He'd write controversial articles to get reader reaction. Mm-hmm. So not only were there the territorial disputes, natural territorial disputes, by the canines in the UFO field, we had the fake ones.
Mm. Jim Moseley is one of the people, probably the person I most wish I could have met. I began this project, you know, not that long ago in historical terms, right? So he was gone by then. But I wish I could have met him. I love reading his stuff now. It's absolutely fascinating and funny and very funny as well.
I remember days in, days out where I'd hang out at Jim's place. He was drinking Vat 69 ale or some other kind of whiskey. I don't know anything about alcohol. And maybe later on smoking a joint. And he'd go on and talk. And he showed me a lot of stuff about his life. I learned very much about his life, where he showed the letters that his father, who was a very right-wing military officer and official in the army, nearly anti-Semitic, certainly close to being a Nazi, And he wanted Jim's mom, because they had separated at this point, to send Jim off to military school. Now imagine Jim Moseley in military school. I mean, if you know anything about his personality, this would be outrageous. He was one of the first two guests we had on the PowerCast when we started the show. Because he was just so fascinating. And even a couple of months before he died, we had him on the show, and he was a guy in his early 80s, and he was still Jim Moseley.
That's great.
So I got to know him a little bit. I heard him on the show. I wrote to him, and, you know, we had a bunch of phone calls. And he just had – his involvement in the field was incredible. He knew everyone. You know, later on, he was hosting conventions and through his newsletter. He was so well connected, and he saw so much history and had a lot of the personal scoop, you know, the backstage drama. He was aware of that. So, you know, it's – I think – you know, people need to take a look into some of his work, you know, his book, and become more familiar with it. I'm changing gears a little bit. So one thing that I'd like to talk about was modern audiences can only relate to the Nimitz case as having a big impact in the media and culturally. But there used to be a lot of those. And one of the big ones that was kind of a game changer was in the 60s with the Barney and Betty Hill case. Because that changed, you know, we'd heard about contactees before, but then this was a story of abduction. This was really big in magazines and newspapers. And Greg, can you tell us how that reached the mainstream public?
Yeah. And June, you were talking earlier in our conversation about the book that caught your attention early on. For me, probably the really formative, or that oomph movement moment in my life about UFOs came when I read The Interrupted Journey. In 1966, I guess it was published by the journalist John Fuller about the Hills and about their case of alien abduction, right? The events that take place, you know, 5 years earlier in 1961. So it only really kind of gets any full public attention, really when that book comes out and does fairly well. Though I guess there were some articles that preceded that, and of course they were beginning to be known about within the UFO communities.
Let's do our break here. Yeah. We'll talk about that, Barney and Betty Hill, and lots of other things from the 60s. I remember the 60s. And I can't tell you where my mind was at. That's another story. Anyway, Gene, Greg, and Kurt, you're in
the PowerCast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
One of the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives is now in custody after being captured in Mexico. 48-year-old Octaviano Juarez Cuero had been on the run since Memorial Day 2006 after allegedly shooting two people and wounding three others at a Milwaukee picnic, according to the FBI. The FBI adding the alleged shooter to their list in 2021, and they were able to track him down last week in Guadalajara, Mexico. He now faces faces multiple charges, including first-degree intentional homicide. Several units of American troops being deployed to Eastern Europe are now on the ground in Poland and Germany. President Biden ordering the move in response to a threat of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Find us online at usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News. As the Olympics continue in Beijing, a protest taking place in Washington, D.C. on Saturday afternoon across from the White House, a group of Uyghurs, an ethnic minority native to northwest China, denounced the Games. China is accused of committing genocide against the Muslim Uyghurs, and this speaker compared the situation to what happened in Germany in the 1930s.
The lack of international investigation will only embolden China to continue its brutal attempts to eradicate the Uyghurs, just like how Hitler started his Holocaust of the Jews following the 1936 Berlin Olympics.
The United States led a diplomatic boycott of the Olympics by several countries in protest of China's record of human rights violations. Republican Senator from Florida Marco Rubio saying he's not watching the Olympics as a protest. USA Radio News.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So about the Hills, I think that was one of the few abductee cases that NICAP allowed to be covered in their pages. Go on, Greg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the thing that's interesting about that from my standpoint is because, you know, one thread, one current, of course, in the whole history of the UFO phenomenon is the whole phenomenon and claims of contact with aliens here on Earth. Certainly didn't begin with the Hills. Obviously, there had been all these folks, the contactees, well before that in the 1950s. But what's intriguing is, of course, the Hills are widely understood or thought or seen as the beginning of a kind of change, a radical change in how that alien contact, that encounter sort of plays out. They're the beginning of this idea of the alien abduction, right? The alien abduction phenomenon. What's interesting for me from, again, social historical perspective is that, of course, if we make this argument that the media is responsible for generating stories alone, that media, you know, attention basically promotes more sightings, more claims that are along similar lines, and people mimic these things. There's a sort of mimicking effect. The interesting thing to me about the Hills is it is a case that gets a lot of publicity. Years later, it's turned into a film. But you don't, in fact, have this kind of unfolding sort of serial sort of phenomenon of waves of claims by people saying they were abducted over the course of the late 60s and the 1970s. Yes, there are cases, and they're going to get publicity. The Pascagoula case in 73 is going to be one, though it's very different in terms of how it's described than the Hills. So you really don't see the explosion of the alien abduction claims until you get really into the 80s and then the 90s. So there is, in fact, this kind of period of, again, from a larger popular cultural viewpoint, of a kind of a gap. And so it seems to me you can't just simply, it seems to me a good example where we have to say, we can't just say media, you know, a media sensation translates into people going to mimic these things. It clearly isn't that simple. So that's one of the things I find fascinating about the consequences of the Hills case.
When you talk about the consequences and maybe imitation, so there's been some speculation that a decade or so later, when there was a television movie made, that might have influenced Travis Walton. You know, so then we have that was in 1975, and so there were some things happening then.
Right, and that becomes sort of one of the questions. And we hear similar things, right, about when Close Encounters of the Third Kind comes out. Maybe less so about E.T., but certainly Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the Spielberg movie, comes out. And I don't know, I hear this a lot, these questions again about do popular books, do they have this kind of echo effect, if you will? I think that from my standpoint, I think the jury is still out whether or not these things necessarily translate into a kind of an uptick of sightings or an uptick of claims. It seems to me you need other things to be lined up to make that happen. And I think one of the things that if you say look backward and forward with regard to the Hills case, backward in terms of talking about what we've been just talking about before, about these UFO organizations and groups and clubs that had formed in the 50s who helped sort of keep the momentum going in the interest in UFOs. One of the things that the Hills kind of lacked was that very kind of thing, a kind of an easy or at least a kind of a sustained advocacy for this sort of claim. It was an unusual claim for its time, right? And that's part of what made it stand out, was it was so unusual, relatively speaking. That that's going to change, right? Because by the time you start to get into the late 70s, right, you get, I guess, the Betty Andreessen case is going to be the later part of the 70s. Then you're going to get into the Bud Hopkins, the David Jacobs in the 80s. And then what you're going to have is actually figures who are going to see it as their mission to really make sure this stuff gets attention, it stays in focus, on center stage as much as possible, both within the UFO community and then in popular culture as well. And that seems to be another dimension of this that I think comes out when you start to think about how these things are interrelated or at least compared to other things in the history of the UFO phenomenon.
Did you look at all at the connection with the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still in 1951 and some of the early contact claims?
You know, I've thought about it and looked at it. It seems to me that I don't know that, I'll put it this way, I don't know that the film necessarily influenced those major figures who were a part of the contactee community, George Adamski being probably the most notable case, but all the others. Rather, the way I kind of understand it, or the way I see it, is they're both that the contactees, so many of them expressing kind of New Age philosophy, steeped in certain kinds of forms of mysticism and things like that, oftentimes theosophy, that the film and the filmmakers and those contactees were both, in fact, responding to similar kinds of things at the same time. So that they're simultaneously, or they're working in tandem parallel with one another, rather than necessarily one influencing the other.
Now, George Adamski, as an example, used the claim of meeting the silvery clad alien in the desert to advance his beliefs. It was just a mechanism. It was a way going through the back door, as he once admitted to one of his followers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, his explanations could change at different times in different settings, right? It does seem to me the evidence shows that he saw flying saucers as a useful platform to help express his great belief in what had been a fairly long part or a lengthy part of his life, right? His engagement and his commitment to philosophies that were metaphysical in nature, right? And so he seems to have been just finding this to be a kind of a ready-made opportunity for him. And there are other people, by the way, who seem to be like that. Operating at the time, many of the contactees, but you can look in foreign countries. If you look in a place like Germany, there's a fellow by the name of Karl Veit who ends up being the major figure in the kind of looming figure in German ufology for decades over there. Very similar story, a guy who was committed to kind of a form of Christian mysticism, and had always been engaged in it, been engaged with it with his father. And then when the flying saucer phenomenon happens, he sees in it something deeply meaningful, as he puts it, as something, and he himself sees a flying saucer and sees this as something that can be easily understood within the framework of this other kind of Christian mystical vision that he had already had available to him at the time. So a lot of this stuff involves a kind of a going back and forth between these sort of new developments that now get seen through the lens, right, of these religious and devotional attitudes that a lot of people had.
We have Greg Agigian. He's a professor of history, exploring the unknown. And we're talking now about the early contactees, and I'm going to have a question in our next segment about one specific contactee whose story was itself a little bit different, with Gene and Greg and Kurt in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days, you still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scented hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. Great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. Order now, because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork. You know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best, deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-932-5140. 800-932-5140. 800-932-5140. That's 800-932-5140.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, Greg, have you explored the tale of sign painter Howard Menger from High Bridge, New Jersey?
A little bit about him. He's not been kind of a centerpiece of my stuff. And partly because he kind of enters in after a lot of the other folks have chimed in, right? When does he start? Is he late 50s that he starts to get sort of public exposure?
Right. And it's more interesting there too. We met him in the mid 60s, Jim Moseley and I. Now, you'd think Jim Moseley was as far from being a fan of contactees as anyone, okay? Yeah. In fact, for a while, he adopted the so-called Earth theory, where UFOs were secret weapons, and that was based on something that Dr. D, Leon Davidson, had told him, but that's another story. Let's talk about Howard Menger. Howard Menger had gone on an early radio show, the pioneer paranormal show Long John Neville.
Yep.
And for a brief time, Neville had a TV show, but his kind of chatter did not translate to television. He was best with long-form radio. Okay, like I have a face for radio, so I understand about this. Okay, so we're not going to say anything about my guests because Greg and Kurt would do fine. In any case, one day, Menger calls Jim because he had a published phone number for Saucer News headquarters at 303 Fifth Avenue, New York. Between 5th and Madison, I remember it well. And he said, you'd like to talk with Jim about something. Howard Menger calling Jim Moseley. What's going on? This is after he appeared on Long John Neville's TV show, where Long John expected him to recite his spiel about meeting handsome aliens. This time he's saying, you know, I'm not so sure that's what's going on. And of course, Long John did not like to be surprised on the radio. He wanted everything to be controlled. On TV, he was even less apt to take it, and he had a pretty nasty temper. Let's go to Howard Menger calling Jim Moseley. So we meet him at a diner across the street from the Saucer News office, and Menger says he thinks that maybe he was an unwilling or unknowing participant in some kind of government experiment, that the aliens he met were government agents, and he was brought into it. Now, one thing about Menger's claims, some of his pictures of UFOs were paintings, some of which duplicated the scene of the flying saucer taking off in The Day the Earth Stood Still. You compare the two, they're near identical. Okay, so he's talking about possibly being the victim of a government experiment. Did you ever see any claims like that in the contactee field going back to these years?
Government involvement. I don't know. Did Dan Fry ever go down that route?
Redfern suggested that Orfeo Angelucci might have. There's a scene where he meets, I guess, one of his ET contacts alleged in a diner, and he takes this pill, and suddenly he went into a dream, to quote a certain song.
Nobody ever, of the major figures, right? Nobody ever, if they did go down that route, it was never a big part of the message, right? Because the message was always about what our space brothers and sisters had in store for us, right? That was always the message. But no, I don't recall anybody specifically doing that. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, Menger and his wife later moved to Florida, where he started building UFO models, I guess with the suggestion that someday he'd invent an actual flying saucer. He gave up the story, or didn't talk about the story, of possibly being the victim. But then let's move away from that. We were going into the changes in the contactee movement, where now it's the abductions. We have the Hills, we go to the 80s, of course, Whitley Strieber being an example.
An interesting thing to look at is, you know, culturally, is that, you know, when Steven Spielberg made Jaws and his next movie, they were expecting it to be another horrifying movie, you know, and something, and he pulled a switch on us. All the advertising for Close Encounters of the Third Kind was, you know, it was very ominous, you know, watch the skies and it's very dark. But then, you know, his aliens turned out to be good guys, and, you know, there was a little bit of that contactee message, you know, with this benevolent aliens that was worked into that. You know, although the aliens themselves, they were closer to what we think of the grays. That was a switch.
Yeah, I mean, and that kind of gets at a point that I've often remark on, which is the extent to which there has often been at times this kind of disconnect between what's going on within the UFO communities, the people who are, you know, talking about this stuff and getting together at conferences and writing about this in UFO periodicals and those kind, and doing investigations, and then Hollywood on the other. I mean, if you think about the 50s, right, the day the Earth stood still is really anomalous, right, in terms of portraying aliens. Aliens, mostly in the 1950s films, are portrayed as, you know, invaders. They're invading us. They're here to take over and conquer us, and they're dangerous and they're menacing. But that wasn't, as we've just been talking about, that really was not the message of most alien contact stories and claims, and certainly the ones that were probably the more highly publicized ones. That was far from what was being claimed by people like Adamski and Bethurum and people like that. Then you get to what you're just talking about, Kurt. You get into the 70s and 80s, and you're quite right. By then, we start hearing more stories of if the aliens aren't malevolent, then at the very least, they're kind of cold and unfeeling and frightening. And you're right, Spielberg presents us with E.T., I mean, with Close Encounters, and E.T. then is the same way. And aliens, you're quite right, they're awe-inspiring, the experience meeting them, and in fact, the way they seem to call people forth operates on almost a spiritual level. There's a and that final scene, right, is really one of transcendence. It's about being taken up with the gods, right? There's a kind of another disconnect there. And I'm fascinated with the ways in which it's clear that at times Hollywood wants to and does take its cues from what's going on, you know, at the grassroots level, but then in other times it just doesn't care. It just works on its own logic, I think.
Just to circle back a little bit, how did you fool the university in allowing you to teach this course?
That's very funny. You know, a lot of people ask me, I'm asked a lot, about whether or not I get blowback, whether or not have I encountered the kind of ridicule, the kind of raised eyebrows and, you know, the lack of funding and things that, you know, has been a long story in the history of people interested in UFOs, right? The kind of stuff that Alan Hynek used to talk about and all of that. And I pointed out that what's interesting is that when I undertook this, I expected actually quite a bit of that. I began applying for grants and I thought, we'll see what happens. And to my surprise and delight, I got funding from NASA. I got funding from the American Historical Association, from the American Philosophical Society. And then from the Smithsonian. So, and likewise, when it comes to teaching and talking about this stuff, I will say almost universally the response I get is, oh, wow, that is so cool. That is so neat. This is so interesting. I've had some colleagues who've even said to me, I envy you. I wish I could have done that. Or I had last year I had a woman who would like to come to Penn State to do graduate studies who contacted me and said, I had no idea that you could study things like this at the university and do research on this. If I want to do that kind of thing, I had no idea you could do this. And so part of what I feel like I'm doing is sort of opening up avenues for people to say, hey, you know, why have we been, especially in history, why have we been neglecting this? I mean, it's such a rich history, and particularly as I listen to you, Gene, I'm reminded just how rich and fascinating these characters are in the history of this. We need to recover this stuff. We need to be able to talk about this and bring this to a wider audience and a wider public.
We got more with Greg, Gene, and Kurt. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.